Mary Ann is the director of the Health Profession Pathways, H2P Consortium. And as part of that, that is a TACT one grant for $19.6 million. And it's interesting to note, it's 9 colleges in 5 states. So there's kind of a lot of alignment here. Let's see. 8 colleges in 5 states.
We have both grants.
9 colleges in 5 states. And it's really been focused, the H2P initiative has been focused on displaced workers, veterans, and low-skilled individuals. And so she is going to talk about effective partnerships and a lot of other things, but one of those is the effective partnerships that have been created with the H2P with employers.
Okay, as effective as they can be.
There you go.
Can you say? Well, hopefully, again, feel free. I really like the interactivity, and if I've over-talked, I'm sorry. I can't help myself. This is so exciting to me, this work, and it's really part of a life's work for me. I've actually been in community college education for 40 years, since 1976, so, and served most recently as a dean of health and public safety. So I really understand, you know, the role of the community college and the workforce. So we're going to be talking, essentially, my goal here is, I've been brief thinking along the way. I'm going to share with you a little bit about the H2P Consortium and some of the learning that we have had with some of our outcomes. We're really in our 4th year no-cost extension, which means we're really just finishing up gathering data and focusing on employment outcomes for our participants. So, just to tell you a little bit about what our vision is, and we came together 4 years ago now, 9 very disparate community colleges ranging from Little Pine Tech in Minnesota with 900 students, yay, all the way up to the Malcolm X Community College and City Colleges of Chicago, and that system itself has like 35,000 students and has all the issues related with inner city, and then everything in between, urban, rural, we've all kinds of different combinations. And so our vision, as we said here, was to literally make a dramatically improve the healthcare career pathways and through the development of core curriculum. We have a core curriculum, national core curriculum project for healthcare, which, you know, I'm not going to talk about here, but if you're interested, I can send you information on. Working directly with our workforce partners. So everything we do is workforce-centric. So each of our, a couple of slides as I advance, I'll show you what our strategies were. You'll see each one of the strategies has a workforce component in within it. Okay, so these are our 5 states, and we made Indiana a little darker because we're squishing them, but really, we have so many, as we have expanded, their system has actually joined us, too. So, you know, that's why they're a little different there. And you can see the different colleges, Kentucky, Minnesota, Ohio, Texas, and Illinois would be the 5 states. Okay, so when we came together, healthcare, you know, had been an ongoing, continuing crisis. So this is kind of like, when you look at workforce and workforce partnerships, it's a really good idea to, first of all, look at what are the national imperatives and trends associated with the healthcare, education, and employment. And first of all, we have this first statistic is that we have an unmet demand, so we know that we need to build our capacity. We have a spiraling out of control GNP for healthcare in this country that continues through the Affordable Care Act and its implementation. And we have healthcare demands for services that we know are going to continue to increase because people like me are aging. So that in and of itself will increase those demands for services. That the supply will not meet the demand unless we do something different. And that the time to training is increasing. There is this degree creep, which we've all seen in our community colleges and in our systems, in trying to take underprepared individuals and get them to the degree level within a reasonable amount of time. and that our retention statistics at community colleges are abysmal. 25% is actually generous, considering the national trend. Okay, so this is just, I love this slide, because it shows you where our, just the healthcare economy, just the healthcare economy is in the United States in relation to the world economy. So we are the fifth largest country, just the healthcare economy here, GNP. So that kind of puts it into you know, obviously this cannot continue in order for this country to remain healthy and viable into the future. So is there a solution? Well, we hope there has to be a solution. This is inevitable. So there is general agreement among all sectors, with the workforce, with the employer, with the job seeker, that if there are strategic partnerships between all three, and obviously education to the fourth, that we will be able to make a difference. But this is kind of what it looks like right now. You know, we have all these employers and community colleges and everybody kind of talking to each other, and we all have little deals between one another. And I don't even know with my own community colleges what all the partnerships we have and what we're doing. And sometimes I think we're working at cross purposes, and of course we have the credit side of the house and the non-credit side of the house. And I mean, it's mind-boggling. I'm talking about my own little community college, not you. You folks have really made me nuts. But surprisingly, I can even talk. You know, it's just crazy. So we've got to make some sense out of all this. Okay, so this is some just interesting stuff. Okay, first of all, we got what educators say about employers. Oh, did I miss one? Nope, I did. Okay, this is what educators are saying about employers. This is what the data says. We invite them and ask what they need, but they don't talk. They just sit there. They don't tell us what they really want. And then they want things done immediately. I mean, you know, we can't do it immediately. And they just don't understand what our accreditation requires, how few resources we have, how little money we have, what our internal processes are, blah, 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 okay? 72% of education leaders say that newly educated workers are ready for the workforce, but yet 42% of employers think this is true. So there's a disconnect there. Hey, then this is what employers say about the educators. Takes too long to get things finished. They ask for our advice after the courses are already developed. So they want stamp of approval. We tell them what we think, but we never know what they do with it. Okay. Again, this is even a more abysmal statistic. 96% of surveyed college university chief academic officers were confident in the ability to prepare students for the workforce. Whereas only 11% of business leaders strongly agree that today's graduates have the skills and competencies businesses need. So something is wrong here. Okay, disconnect. And then we got the job seekers. Those who were supposedly serving, okay, say, such things as, I did exactly what I was supposed to do. Why don't I have a job? This job is not what I'm prepared for. Or they have unrealistic expectations of me once they get on that job. So anyway, I just like that one. Wow, wow, wow. So with this all in mind, we put together the health professions pathway strategies. And the strategies really are focused on changing our model. A model from a strictly linear courses curriculum model to one that is a pathway model that is very intentional from assessment and career exploration and all the way through to employment on the other end. And believe me, employment is not something that most community colleges do well. They do great at getting their students into programs, not so great with the retention part, and it's abysmal what they do with the job placement. It's hit or miss at best. A case in point, my own college. We have a really robust program that has actually from the inception of the college in the 60s. And this is a co-op program. It's really nationally known. And a lot of our students do partake in the co-op program, which is great. Great job readiness, the whole bit. So we have co-op coordinators that take care of this. And they are attached to programs. So then you have a situation where a student graduates, and very often the co-op coordinator can help with that, or else they'll get the job for which they were placed in. However, if there's somebody from outside, and not everybody participates, only about 40% of the students now participate in co-op, but if an employer has a job, and they call the college, and they say, we have a job, could you place us with the right person? They don't know who to place them with. So the call goes all over the place, and eventually the employer says, gets so frustrated, they say, you know, forget it, I'll go someplace else. So, you know, we really don't have a system that works well, even though we have the infrastructure to support it. Okay, so these, basically, if you look at this, you know, our strategies start off with prior learning, assessment, and career guidance. And I'm going to show you some work that we've done, well, actually later, okay, never mind. I'm not going to show you that. I took that out. Too much stuff. If you want it, I'll get it for you. Through to the contextualized education, we have courses that we contextualize for developmental education that have decreased time to completion. Really great statistics on that. But even greater statistics on the boot camps and the student tutoring and the work that you folks have all done with our students in order to prepare them and to keep them out of DevEd and directly into the career pathway. We are working with our employers on all of this. So as we are developing these contextualized courses, they're helping us developing the scenarios, doing interviewing, coming to the classroom and helping with this work and validating the work. The industry recognized technical credentials. Anything we do as far as developing, in fact, all three, we have 83 programs of study and three pathways, therapeutics, diagnostic, and informatic. Each of those pathways has a stackable credential to degree plan. Not all nine community colleges have all programs, so they're pick and choose based upon what the needs are for their community. But clearly the employers are the ones that are validating those pathways in each case. And then enhanced retention support, that's basically all the work you're doing, which is exceptional advising, making sure these students are on the career path and providing linkages between the workforce system and the student and the educator. So it's really been very, very successful. We have an incumbent worker training programs. About 500 students already have completed incumbent worker training and have gotten promotions within their organizations. And then certainly the enhanced data and accountability, everybody is, you know about that being a part of a TAP grant. And then eight makes us really unique. That's galvanizing a national movement to improve health professions training. And this is essentially our scaling of our core, national core curriculum movement for which we now have had gone from the nine community colleges and through our summits and institutes, now have 35 that are working with their community partners. They have to attend the institute with the community partners and workforce in order to develop these core curriculum pathways that are meaningful for their particular region.
Excuse me, can I ask a question?
Yes. I'm sorry, what was that?
Maybe I'm on totally the wrong track. Is that what we would call a meta major at the community college? Because we're looking at an allied health meta major that would prepare them for other, you know, it's kind of a broader funnel.
The core curriculum you're talking about? Yes. The competency-based core curriculum is an entry-level set of knowledge, skills, and abilities based upon, you know, again, that wasn't prepared to talk about this because I could spend an hour on it, but it's based upon the allied health competency model, but we use that for nursing also, for healthcare. And these are the basic competencies that cross over all healthcare. And not only is it knowledge, but it's also skill sets and abilities that are common to all. So that, and these then, knowledge, skills, and abilities are taken from the general curriculum for each of the pathways and are placed then in as a baseline credential.
So Montana's doing a nice job with that. We think of it as kind of a trailhead.
Yeah.
So that's, kind of that's where you go and park, and then you can pick whatever trail you decide to.
Absolutely. That's exactly what it is. And there are so many advantages, even from a standpoint of from the community college, by teaming and by utilizing the resources effectively, it is a real cost savings, and at the same time, you have the faculty interacting at an early level as well as the students, which is very positive. So, yes. Some of the things that we have done here with our improving student outcomes, we've worked, okay, I'm looking for, is there a, how do I move around on this?
Isn't it working?
With the button? Well.
No.
Moving around to the next slide, or what? Or
no, I'm trying to show one of our, we're right now at the deliverable stage, so we've done a lot of work with deliverable. Oh, no, that's not what I wanted. Okay, I'm going to, oh, we are really messed up now.
Sorry.
Okay. Oh, we went previous. Okay. Well, here's.
Yeah, is that not working?
Okay, this is. Okay. Where's the. Okay, I need to be able to click on this.
Yeah, you should be able to get a cursor. I don't usually use those. I usually use the touchpad. But
yeah.
Jenny!
Okay, well, while we're looking
that's
for that,
why I can
talk to you about some of the things we've done to improve students. We've used your hub, but we've been using the virtual career network that was developed in partnership with IC and AACC for career exploration, career guidance and information, and also some basic remediation. Most of our colleges use WorkPiece, Fit and Talent, and we've had about 4,000 credentials that have been earned by our students out of the 6,500 that we've served so far. The majority being the silver credential, which of course is consistent with an associate degree level of work. And then we do a lot with pre-assessment and tutoring. I want to show you a toolkit that we developed for our student success coaches that I thought would be helpful for you and you can all access, assuming it comes up. Yes, there it is. Okay, this is on the iseek.org site, and so this is one you can just access. And this was basically put together by our 9 career coaches, and they have a practice group, a community of practice that meets on a regular basis, and one of them is a convener. And together, along with iSeek, who is one of our technical assistance providers, put together a toolkit. And this cool toolkit is helpful because you can click on here and you can see these are different types of, say if you're looking for assessments that are possible, you could click on any one of these and it can show you the types of interest assessments that are available, skills assessments. Somebody said that something before that some of them were costly. Some of these are free. So you could. So this is just a resource guide that you can use for career exploration for student success advisors. Now, students can use this too, but it's really meant to be for you to be able to provide the support needed. Okay, now can I get out of this? Yes. So we've got self-assessment, exploring careers, planning. This one's a good one. Creating a planning document like SMART goal setting. We know that goal setting for students is really one of the things that is significantly will support their ultimate success. So showing, using the SMART goal setting concept, which you're probably all familiar with. And then this has like a little activity. And we hope over to continue to add to this body of knowledge. So this is just something that's not what was developed in partnership. So I guess it is a partnership related activity. Okay. So now I should be able to get out of this and back into my PowerPoint, right?
You should be able
to. Yay, it worked. Okay. And then, again, our advisors, we require that each of our, and I think you did something similar, didn't you, Maria, where you had to have you required a career coach for each.
It was part of the one.
Right. It's part of the award that you had to hire a full-time career coach, and we did the same thing. And some of our community colleges hired 2 or 3, depending upon their size. Okay, this again showing, this is actually needs probably updating, but showing that we're using ACT WorkPiece assessments, and not all of our colleges, but 5 of the 9 do. intrusive, which I know we shouldn't be using that word, intrusive, but academic advising, pre-admission employment, our credit completion rate's at 87%, which is way over our projection. So our students are doing well, they're completing, and to date we've had 426 students that were granted a prior learning and 600 classes avoided as a result of that.
Nancy has a question.
Question? Yes. Oh, sorry, yes.
Two things about the ACT. So how do your credit colleagues regard that? Do they embrace that? And then are employers recognizing it?
Luckily, our employers are recognizing it through the healthcare collaborative. That's not the case in all the sectors.
Okay.
I think in the sectors that are developing robust relationships, as they see this product, they're more and more embracing it more and more. So, actually, over the 3.5 years we've been working, we've actually seen greater acceptance. Started off with just one. And, you know, it's up to now 5 colleges that are using it at some level, not the same level that we're using it at Cincinnati State. Every single student that comes through goes through the assessment. That's the first thing we do.
Through your grant or through the college?
No, through the grant. Well, through the grant. And then now that has been actually scaled to several healthcare programs, and we've additionally added a new gateway course called Bio 100, which has that integrated into it that 90% of the students take. So in the future, and they pay that as part of their fees. That's how we managed to get the part of course fee. So we have, the goal is to have all the students take this as an assessment. It's been very helpful for them.
Mm-hmm. And I think from our perspective of using it, it just gives us another way to gauge where they're really at their math and reading skills.
It's been more of an issue for acceptance that, from employers and also the credit side as far as in.
ACT does have a recommendation, is it from Cal, was it, that 3 credits be awarded for it? But, you know, we haven't implemented any credit for
it.
We've embedded it, so it's part of the credit. Hello. So that's really loud.
That's it, yours?
It's one that's got to be close to mine.
It sounds like it's attached to this.
It sounds like it's in the room.
It's in the room. Hello?
Let's see who answers.
No, I'm sorry, we're not answering today. I have no idea what that is. I will say that the advantage to the students, first of all, they get really excited when they get their little certificate. We actually made a wall of fame. We had this huge wall. We put all the certificates up, then we give it back. No, it sounds like something that's coming from the...
Yeah. Environment. Yeah. Beat me up, Scotty.
Well, they gave us.
And then as the, with it being embedded into that entry-level course, which has become part of our core, so it's a core curriculum course, it's embedded into the core, it's being recognized, it's being shared, it becomes part of their transcript, and we consider it their first stackable credential, even though TAC does not consider it a stackable credential, but we consider it that, and so do our employers. So, but that's in one community. It depends upon your community, really. Okay, and this is just showing some other things we're doing, trying to decrease time to completion, and we've already talked about the competency-based core. Okay, so this is where. We spent a lot of time working on those WIB relationships, and it was required that each of our co-grantees develop that relationship if they didn't have it. And they were all over the place and still are. Some of them are very healthy relationships, and some of them are not so healthy. But I will say that through participation in the H2P grant, they've all become healthier as a result of that. So the key there is what we want them to do is get very involved in the development of these stackable credentials needed for the community through the community college and collaboration, and then creating jobs that meet the individual needs within that particular region and building skill sets through credentials, so thus the stackable credential concept. Now, some of the things that we've done with incumbent worker training, in addition to developing actual training programs that are needed by for incumbent workers within the healthcare organizations, within the communities, also they have adopted, many of them, the School at Work program, which is a work, which is actually an academic readiness program for advancement that predates really entry into college. So teaching them basic workplace skills, reading, writing, math, locating information, types of skill sets that they will need in a safe environment within their workplace. And they get time off to do it, so they don't have to worry about getting to school or logging onto a computer. It becomes part of their workday, but it, and it's a very entry-level process. So we have many of them that have adopted that also. Okay, so the role of the workforce is that, in addition to they, we require it, but that they are assisting us with development to for identifying the TAA population, which you all know is tough. I mean, we really over-projected because the TAA workers just were not there for any of our states once we actually started looking. And we did. We worked collaboratively with them. So with a whole lot of effort, we managed, I think we're going to end up with maybe 100. And that is, you know, stretching it. But also working with VAs and displaced workers, and they were really helpful and continue to be. Providing guidance on our education design for our pathways, sourcing for labor market information and trends that are relevant as we plan. So they will be often provide that, you know, the that lens and that data for us that is so important, and then creating opportunities. So again, on here you say that, you know, 400 employers evaluated workforce issues are important. A strategic challenge, and that we need to build talent and leadership. That was obviously highly rated. That many of our, again, just to confirm what we already know, that they're missing skills needed for promotion, so we have to work on developing them, and that hard to find well-qualified applicants. So these are all things we're working on together. Okay, this demonstrate some of the best practices we have with our community colleges. The first one is Anoka Ramsey, which is in, and it's actually in a suburb of Minneapolis. And they have a very strong contractual relationship between their WIB and their college for on-site personnel. So this was paid for with grant funds. So they were able to fund somebody on the WIB site that was actually a college employee that helped them navigate services and to provide intake and support. At Cincinnati State, where I am from, we launched the Pathway to Employment Center, which is co-located with the WIB. We are in the basement of the WIB. And we provide direct integration of services, as well as we actually offer entry-level certifications and do testing. We are a Pearson testing site, and we do the NCRC, we do fit and talent, and we do tutoring, and as well as intake. Then at Owens, they actually contracted, they work directly with their WIB called The Source, that provides ACT, NCRC, and they also had an on-site career coach that they funded with their grant, with one of their major healthcare systems. And at Pine, they have a very strong relationship with their WIB and their employment and training center for TANF services directly on-site. And again, they're very rural, very poor, and do a great job serving their population. Now, as far as employer partnerships, we have three really good practices here. Cincinnati State being the oldest, and that's one that I represent. Actually, I was a founding member in 2003. There were four of us. Are the community college that I represented. Also, the career tech superintendent was on board, as well as two of the major hospital systems at the time, representing 25,000 employees. And in 2003, what was happening in healthcare? Okay, wake up. What was happening in healthcare in 2003?
10 years ago?
It's 12, 13 years ago. Well, what's happening? Anybody have, can you remember back that far? There were serious, serious shortages. I mean, every one of our nursing graduates had 4 or 5 offers, and then they were stealing from one another, and there was huge shortages. So the healthcare system was getting worried, so they asked to meet with us, and we developed the collaborative at that point to try to come up with a way to increase the capacity of the education institutions, be able to provide trained personnel, and then to be able to work with their own loyal employee base, which is their entry-level workers, to create training programs in order to get nurses, respiratory therapy. I think it was initially it was respiratory therapy, nursing, surgical technology, and occupational therapy. Those were the four. Subsequently, we've added several more: health information technology, health IT, and obviously clinical lab, and some others, coding, and others have been added. So this continues on. There's this book here if you're interested. Aspen just published it in the summer called Connecting People to Work. It's Workforce Intermediary and Sector Strategies. It's a good book. And we are profiled, I think, in Chapter 8 here of that book. And El Centro, they have a great Grow Your Own program with their 4 hospital systems in Dallas, Texas. And Jefferson created an excellent Grow Your Own program, which I'm going to profile here in a minute. And then in addition to that, they have replicated our model and now have the Health Careers Collaborative of Greater Louisville, which is going gangbusters. They now have a full-time executive that's running it, and very, very interesting organization that they have developed. Okay, so I said before, to redirect from the silos to meaningful programs of study. Okay, so now, any questions before I go on? Because I'm going to profile 3 partnerships. We talked a little bit about our partnership. We're going to continue on with that. And then 2 more, Greater Louisville, and then 1 that is getting national prominence, and we're partnering with them in developing some core curriculum strategies. Okay, first of all, the HCC, as I said, it was established in 2003. These are the key reasons why we came together. We want to increase awareness and access to healthcare careers for individuals in order to increase outcome employment. Increasing diversity, because it was really clear. When we started doing some study, we found that vast majority of the frontline workers were minorities, and the vast majority of the professional staff, nursing, 2 year associate degree and above, were non-majority. Or a majority, non-minority. And it was just this huge dichotomy. Then further, when you dug deeper, they all had tuition benefits that could be accessed by their employees. And when we did the study, we found that 95% of the resources were going to that advantaged group. So it was associate degree nurses, bachelor's degree nurses, associate degree respiratory therapist, getting bachelor's degrees, master's degrees, and beyond. That's what the resources were being used for. That actually, those that were in the entry-level positions and low-wage positions were not accessing this at all. And you figure out, well, why not? And then digging deeper, it's, you know, resources, all the barriers they have. They have families. They don't have enough money to upfront fund the tuition, because it's on a reimbursement basis. And they didn't have any support. So they weren't getting any support from their management to do this. They had very specific times they had to be in their jobs. There was absolutely no lenience in that the times that they had to be on at work. So what we did as a collaborative is we were able to create these cohorts that were selected by this time we had 4 hospitals in the system, 4 systems, really representing almost all the healthcare in the greater Cincinnati area. And we got a grant. We had a couple of grants. Actually, this is about the 4th grant we had, but this was a $5 million R grant, which enabled us to put employer-based job coaches at all four sites, to put cohort advisors at Cincinnati State and at Great Oaks, and then to support the school at work and career care initiatives. And all these things have been sustained beyond 2013. You know, initial investment, but they've all been sustained. And the idea was that we would recruit from the entry-level workforce into these pathways and provide the support that they need, both financial support, upfront funding, special cohorts, at times when they could, like, everything was done between 4 and 9 on Tuesdays and Thursdays or Mondays and Wednesday, so they could keep their full-time employment, because they had to keep full-time employment, because if they didn't keep full-time employment, they couldn't then support their families. They were living hand-to-mouth, you know. So by doing this, and it was a 3-year program, they were able to earn an associate's degree, including the developmental courses that they needed. But they had to test in at the highest level of developmental. We couldn't take somebody that was... So we did a contextualized developmental, highest level, put them right into the cohort, and they worked together. They did a lot of interdisciplinary work, too. Very successful. We've now had about 130 associate degree grads and over 500 certificate grads since then. Okay. This is our mission statement. You know, the reason this is up here is if you are going to develop a really strong collaborative, you need to have some structure and thought. And that's true what was said earlier. Leave the egos at the door. That has to be the number one premise. You have to have a strong mission statement that everybody can buy into. You have to have guiding principles. 13 years ago, we developed this. We revisit them at a retreat every year, and we have tweaked them small amount, but essentially they're the same. So, you know, basically, what are our guiding principles? We're focusing on job creation, educational advancement, and for us, it's for low-income adults that meet employer needs. Second premise, build a healthcare career pathways responsive to the future needs. So we're constantly tweaking this. And then improving the diversity of our workforce. Just as this morning, as you heard, we are employer-led. With our memorandum of understanding, our employer always will be a chair and is right now. We now have a co-chairmanship for one of our, they do an excellent job. They include, who is included in it, is the colleges and career centers in the greater Cincinnati area, all the healthcare system, our community-based organizations. We have 3 of them that are Stress for Success, Mercy Neighborhood Ministries, actually do training in addition to some assessment and providing students with those basic skills. All the partners do sign an MOU, and we agree collaboration, not competition in training and hiring. And if we get to the point where we're starting to be competitive, we check ourselves, we revisit what it is we're doing, and we tweak it if we need to.
Marianne, can you talk a little bit about the MOU process?
Mm-hmm.
How that came about, and
sure. Well, this was we actually established it in 2003, the MOU. And it came about because we realized that unless we put this in writing and had literally, because the people who were working on the collaborative, we were mid-management or slightly, you know, maybe vice president level, that we needed to have the full-in commitment of the organization. So these MOUs were signed, and we had a signing ceremony, the whole bit. So did Louisville when they did theirs, by the chief executive officers of every organization. So it was clear commitment. We also felt that it was important to define what we were doing, thus the guiding principles, our organizing principles, how we were going to operate as an organization, what our meeting structure looked like. So we established at that point, and we tweaked it since initially we had like an organizational, a leadership council, and then we also had a career coach group that worked. We called them the working partners. So they would each meet monthly and have this system how they would interact with one another. We subsequently have added, in addition to the working partners, a specific student success group. That so they're all working, and then they report to one another. We meet every 6 months as a total group, sharing information. And we also agreed that, you know, how we were going to go about, we have a website. In fact, this is all on here, too. So, you know, please access the website. It has ROI studies, return on investment studies, that are pretty impressive. It has a lot of documents on it. We've been written up a lot, so there's a lot of documentation about this particular group and how they function, because it's not easy. I can tell you, there have been times when, in fact, about 2 years ago, someone actually said in the meeting, maybe we've run our course, maybe we need to disband. You know, we're not really seeing as eye to eye as we want to, or it's not as clear. But so what we did is we got together with a facilitator, an outside facilitator. We re-examined all of our core values, our guiding principles. We tweaked a little bit, and we set up these really communities of practice type committees with very specific action item related agendas. Totally changed things again. We do have a full-time executive director, too.
And who funds that?
Pardon?
Do the partners come?
Well, that's Partners for Competitive Workforce funds it. It's been ongoing.
So when you talked about sustainability, it's a different model than the group this morning that the institutions, the employers, are not paying into.
Well, let me tell you, in order to get it started, because we do have a training, we have a space where we do training, assessment, et cetera. So initially, each of us contributed $100,000 each for a total of $400,000, the four initial partners. And we created this space, shared space. So we have like laboratories, nurse aid training laboratories, and we have testing centers and advising center there. So we do have that, but we have not had to, because that became a barrier for others entering in. So we decided to not make that. Initially, we were going to say $100,000 to play, you know, type thing. But we decided that was probably unrealistic and was keeping folks from participating. So and now they agree to all the policies. For example, it's huge for somebody to agree to upfront tuition fund when it's not in their policy to do that. It's huge for them to agree to pay for developmental education when that was not part of the scenario either, and we're keeping these students from succeeding. So they agree to these other things that are disruptive to their organizations and do cost money, and they also agree to providing now a full-time job coach. So because as long as we've been able to fund with community resources and with grant funding, and we've been able to for 13 solid years, so I just say we just keep doing it. Now, if we get to the point where we don't have any grants coming in, and we are tied to United Way, too. We are funded under United Way. I forgot that, too. So we got Partnerships for Competitive Workforce that's funding the full-time executive assistant. Then United Way is funding a lot of our activities. You know, we have all kinds of partnerships. Cincinnati Reds has a community action group, and they do education training. We do that for them. So there's a lot of other things go on. But it just, you know, over time, you figure it out. Mm-hmm.
So what's the size of your annual budget?
Oh, gosh. Probably about
$400,000. Okay.
Well, this is just shows you some of the ROI. And I just took these excerpts from a couple other of our presentations and show you just kind of like a little vignette of what we see. This is with that those individuals that go through the SOL program. That was just that entry level program, and the return on investment was pretty significant by decreasing their turnover rate of their existing employees just through providing them education and training and basic employability skill information. So that was one. Okay. And then this was done by a study new growth group, and it was just done from one of our partners, that was UC Health, University of Cincinnati Healthcare, and they saw an 11.9% return on investment savings, which represented $4,869 per participant, which is pretty significant. And they had about 40 participants, so it was a significant amount of money that they actually were able to demonstrate that they saved. And then in addition to this, you can see that this is showing performance counseling and evaluation scores for the healthcare collaborative cohorts, those that participated in the incumbent worker cohort. And you see that their overall average scores were higher than the regular population. Okay, and then this is one of our grads. He has a great story. He started off as a transporter, wanted in the worst way to become a nurse, but didn't think he could ever do it. And 3 years later, he became an RN and really was a happy, happy camper. Not that it was easy. It was, there were times when his coaches on both ends, both the job coach, it was funny because at one point, I think the job coach at Cincinnati State and the job coach at TriHealth were meeting weekly regarding this gentleman. But we got him through. Okay. So you see that, you know, some of the things, the positives, is that, you know, you see less turnover, 13% less turnover they were being able to identify. This is an annual cost savings just from reduction in recruitment. Evaluation scores were much higher. He got a 50% pay increase. That's huge for him. He was living, you know, he's getting supplemental assistance because you can't live on $10.20 an hour with a family of four. So, and then his job, employee satisfaction, went up, obviously. He was a much happier person as a result of this. So. This is again, the very entry-level students. Okay, this is way, way before this gentleman. This is the ones that are just preparing to get ready to come to college. And by going through school at work, too, it mitigates the developmental education issue. They score much higher on the placement tests. So you see some of the things that they're saying, you know, blessed and proud and thankful, and they're, and the instructor is in the blue there. Okay, so now I'm going to talk a little bit about our Louisville folks. And actually, this is the Healthcare Collaborative of Greater Louisville, of which Norton Healthcare is one of the prime participants. They're their largest employer in Louisville. It just gives you a little bit of information about their very large system. Okay, so what they worked on were entry-level workforce certificates with Jefferson Community College. And these are the ones that they came up with. The Basic Care Health Foundations course, that's your core curriculum certificate, the entry-level core curriculum certificate. So they helped them to develop it, and now they're hiring these folks with the certificate for entry-level positions. They're also looking for the certificate and hiring other individuals for other positions because they know that they have this. They have the basic skills that they need. And then there's the Intermediate Healthcare Foundations, which is advanced. Very often they'll get this after they've been employed. So they'll continue on to the advanced certificate, which includes this part two of the basic skills, get EKG, they get some pharmacology, pathophysiology. So they have knowledge, skills, and abilities at a higher level so they can get some promotion. And plus then these courses feed into the associate degree program. Okay, and this is some of the statistics they have. The bottom line here is that you see tremendous amount of advancement occurring from your front line. So of all the students that participated in the program, there were 247, 225 were frontline employees, of which, you know, 76.8% received advancement. That's pretty significant. So, you know, it's doing what it's supposed to be doing. And they're working collaboratively, and they're doing outcome data. I just like that. Norton Healthcare is a firm believer in growing your own. So I just thought this little girl was awful cute. Okay, so, and then again, it's looking at the financial impact of retention. So if you can retain an RN, they have a special, what they call the RN Scholar, Norton Scholar Program, and it's to provide nurses pathway to the RN and then BSN for retention purposes. And you see that the retention rate for those that have gone through the Scholar Program, 90.3% versus 60.6% for the non-scholar folks that are being advanced. Okay, and the final one that we're going to talk a little bit about today, we've been doing work with Trinity Healthcare System, and I don't, is it, Colorado's not in there, are they?
No.
No, I don't know, where are you?
Right by Nebraska.
Oh, right there, okay.
In the corner.
Yeah.
Are any of our states? We're a square state. The square
well,
states.
Idaho. you're all square. Yeah, I don't know.
No.
I don't see any of you.
No.
Okay, they're where you're not. So this is a very large healthcare system. So what they have decided to do, and working again, we started working with them in year one of the grant, and found out that they were looking to use the NCRC Fit and Talent to actually see if they could impact their hiring system. So hiring better qualified, better prepared individuals by identifying what exact knowledge, skills, and abilities were attributed to each of their particular pathways. And so they, and I could go on for hours about this, but essentially what they did is they mapped 23 job families. It came up with 23 like jobs. Initially, they had like 140, and they condensed it to 23. And now they're developing the knowledge, skills, and abilities that are needed in each of these, and they're pretty far along. So they've done mapping for nursing, for the nursing assistant, for dietary, nutrition, for transportation, and a lot of and several other career paths. And they know now what they need in order to be able to have a viable candidate. So they test everybody that comes in to Trinity Healthcare for a job, takes the NCRC, Fit and Talent, and also fills out an application, an inventory, to see what types of certifications, et cetera, they have. And this then is assessed up front for viability based upon this mapping that they've done. And instead of, you know, having, I don't know, say you're looking for a nurse and you have a pool of 100 and something, somebody's looking through it going, well, maybe, and they interview several, they'll send what they consider 3 to 4 qualified applicants that have already gone through all the screening to the hiring manager and say any of these are appropriate. And then so the manager has the final say based upon a face-to-face interview. It is greatly, even though you've got the cost up front of assessment, it's greatly reduced their expenses related to hiring. They've already saved, and I think the last count, and that was a year ago, like $1.5 million. It's huge. But in addition to that, what they're seeing now is their retention rate is 50% higher. They have also found that job satisfaction is much better. And even more important with ACA is the satisfaction of the customer or the patient is greater. So their customer satisfaction surveys are coming back much higher. So this is a group to watch, and I think that they're really transforming healthcare and how they're hiring and the expectation. Now, at the same time as they've done this, they're working with their local community college, and great Grand Rapids Community College, and the community colleges in the system, that the system is there, you know, to validate the education part and then create the core curriculum necessary to be able to feed people into this program. And it's pretty amazing.
Are they fine is it more skill set competencies or is it attitude?
It's all. It really is. This is their three concentric circles that they identify. So they said the job analysis of the competencies has been, that has to be done first. Because when they get all the nurses in the room say, is this really important? They do, you know, the Likert scales. And what's the level of importance? They were threw out a lot of things that they thought they needed, and they added things that they didn't know they needed. And so they created the competencies that were true based upon the job itself. So that was really key. And then the test scores. So they look at the research evidence, and then the test scores of the individual, and the patient value. So they do that. The values and what is important to the patient, and then twinning that with the attributes of the individual. And they have the first thing I ask is that, oh my gosh, what are your lawyers, what are your attorneys saying about this? You know, they say it's all been validated. Because it is all based upon competencies. It's not based upon the person. It's based upon the competencies that come out in these validated tests. So, and then there is that final interview, too. So if something comes up, they do a, you know, obviously reference check and that type of thing. So anyway, they're looking for that optimal decision, evidence-based. Okay. Question?
I'm just trying to do timing.
Yeah, I'm done.
You're done. Okay.
All I wanted to do, I have time to show this video?
How? Yeah.
It's 2 minutes.
Absolutely.
Okay, so here we go. Yeah.
No. Uh-uh, you can't. Oh.
Okay, how many of you have seen the collective impact video before? The collective impact group, whatever.
Seattle?
I don't know. But anyway, I just thought it was kind of a good way to summarize.
Yeah, it seems like
okay, this is a video that I actually showed at our annual meeting last year, and I thought it kind of pulls together why partnerships are important. And I was interested in when reading this little publication coming from, and here your president quotes, "We're trying to make sure that there is a collective impact that is greater and more long-lasting than any particular time period or any individual project." I think that's what we're really trying to do. So collaboratives or partnerships are really providing the linkages to this potential collective impact. So that's that. And I think that frames it well. It's like, you know, I think the gentleman that said, with a collective impact, there has to be win for everybody. You know, so you have to, that's why there's common vision, common goals, and sticking to, you know, those guiding principles is really important. So I would say that all those successful collaborations that have occurred that I've seen so far have those elements. So what I'm passing out, and this is in, you know, because I know the time is short and you guys are tired. This is something that we developed we had a partnership with National Association of Workforce Boards, and we had our national meeting there last year in collaboration with them. And we brought together community college leadership and also their workforce partners in healthcare and had them work together for a day. And one of the things we had them do was a strategic partnership assessment, and based upon their perception of their level of importance, and then ultimately the current state of their partnerships, then planning the activities and key learnings or strategies for improvement. And they were all kind of all over. Some of them were just starting, and some of them were very robust. But each of them came out of this with some really good action plans that they've continued to work on. So I thought I'd just share this with you, and I can provide it electronically to Jenny, so yeah, if you can access it. Because it's just a nice tool to be able to use to get some discussion going and some thought-provoking, critical questions that need to be asked in order to have a healthy partnership.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Fantastic. Now she says she always comes over prepared. So
I really appreciate it.